All right, we're live and ready to go. Stacy Brookman, you are here.
I'm here. Yay. Finally. Yay. That's good.
Finally. I mean, first of all, I want to preface this by kind of giving some background, and I have lots of notes. You were on the podcast. My podcast is almost 4 years old. It started in May of 2017. You were on in July of 2018. So I was about a year in. You were on again 2 years later, and that was fantastic. So you were on May of 2020, almost a year ago.
Right.
And I loved that because in your first story, in the first time you were on, you couldn't be very vocal specifically about your story.
Yes. My girls were not of adult age yet. And you have to be really careful when you're when you have minors and a sociopathic ex.
just a little,
you know, just a little minor
caveat there, just a little minor thing. And that, not only that, but I mean, I don't have a sociopathic ex, but I have issues with an ex. And the other thing that I still struggle with is that part of it is my story. Part of it is a kid's story, which I am not qualified, nor should I explain. Right. Part of that is respecting their boundaries of how much of the story they want me to share. And part of it is that my relationship story was two-sided and that person's not there to defend themselves. So you're like, you're navigating all these different aspects. And then in everything, anytime I say anything about my ex or a situation like that, I have to preface it by like, he's not here to defend himself. This is only my part of the story. You know, it's accurate to me, but not necessarily for everyone else. You have to be, anyway, you've handled it beautifully. And
Thank
it was
you.
Quite a situation.
Yes.
I'll have those links to your first two podcast interviews when I do all of the show notes.
Okay, good.
But you've shifted a lot in the last year. So I really want to dive into that.
Yeah. So I have gone from like creating my own, you know, telling my own story for myself to heal and helping other women heal. But really now into becoming the go-to person for resilience and understanding the stories that we tell ourselves, right? The stories that we tell other people, and how do you dig into your own story in order to not just heal, but find your superpowers and become so resilient and live that amazing life that you really want to live. And so our, like I always say, our brains are wired for story. We've seen a lot of that stuff in the news and you hear about story and all this sort of thing, but it really is absolutely true. And you can unleash your story. And when you do that, you actually are cultivating your stories. You're clarifying your stories. I think that is so key. And then you are connecting your stories. Connection is how we communicate in the world. And so all of those are really important in your own resilience story.
This is so exciting to me. I was afraid to write my book. And I was afraid because I didn't want to hurt my mom's feelings, which I didn't. I didn't want to create any rifts with family, even though I was close to my sister, but otherwise we weren't really close. And when my kids came forward and reported that a family member was abusive, I realized that, you know, kids, you're the advocate for those kids, man. It's a totally different thing. Right. I could not say, oh, I'm afraid to share my story and I don't really want to share. I'm going to keep everything real quiet and expect them to want to share theirs. So I wrote my book. I wrote book 4 years ago and I didn't even hesitate. I still had the same fear, but I also hid behind the fear. Because if you're just afraid of sharing it because you might hurt someone, that's a great excuse, right? It's a great excuse.
Of course it is. Yes.
And it did cause some problems. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And you can tell yourself that lie. Oh, I'm not doing this because I, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Oh, aren't you being so great to spare them? It's not a lie, but it's not 100% a truth either.
Well, and here's the thing, hurting yourself by not getting your story out there to save somebody else is not healthy. And that's probably what's happened in the whole relationship throughout, right? You're like, oh, I want to preserve them. I want to preserve their dignity. I don't want to expose them. I don't want to, you know, what if I say something that will hurt their feelings? Well, screw them, right?
Right.
They have hurt your feelings a bazillion times.
Right.
They've done more than that, likely. And so, but as a person who has been in emotional abuse, emotionally abusive relationship, you get that feeling where, you know, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to, let me just be me and I'll just be right here and not disturb anything. And that actually hurts you. And so you have powers and you deserve, and you've got to get to this point where you deserve the respect of other people. You deserve to hold the same level of respect as other people, not be diminished because you're afraid of somebody else's feelings being hurt. And so is there a legal boundary and delicate line? Absolutely. And there are things you can do to mitigate that. I'm not an attorney, but there are things you could do to mitigate that. And lots of authors do, but don't diminish yourself in that process.
I agree. And once my kids had their own story and I was navigating, you know, bringing them to therapy or trying hypnosis, when I was navigating that with them from the fallout, I was like, oh, you know what? Even if their story, part of it is me and I've done some damage, inadvertent, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Even if I am a negative part of my kid's story, I want them to tell it and I'm going to be okay with it because it's their story is from their right. perspective. And mm-hmm. I don't have that in my story. So I really wanted to encourage that. And after my book was written, that's how this podcast launched. 9 months later, this podcast went live and it was so other people could tell their stories. Everything for me is storytelling.
Yes.
There's so much, I use freedom and storytelling. Those are two of the words that I use the most, but also they're values to me. I mean, they're at that level. So I am so excited about what you're doing. You shared your story. How have your kids been through this whole situation now that they're adults?
Oh, so yeah, they have matured through it. They have, you know, when people told me early on, don't worry about it. Your kids will figure it out. They will start to understand and see some of the tricks and tips. And when you're in the midst of that sort of thing, it is so hard not to say anything or do anything or, you know, you want to protect them. And so I did several different things to help not only protect them, but to prepare them for being on their own with their father that, you know, and so it's important that they have the ability to protect themselves. And I fully believe that. And you have to tell the truth. I fully believe that.
Right.
And so as they've navigated that, they've kind of gone in some different ways and feel ambiguous and things like that. They've matured. They're 22 and 20 now. And just amazing exploratory human beings, right? I love what they do. One is getting ready to get her own travel trailer and set out on her own and explore the United States. She's gone to Japan twice on her own, you know, just doing work away and different things. And the other one has a steady job. She's very secure. She's and so it's not without some issues, right? Some struggle with connections and relationships, struggle with feeling good about themselves. That's huge fallout. And so I have poured into them as much as I can because sometimes I can see them going in the same direction as me is like, okay, minimizing yourself, letting everybody else have their say. And I'm like, this is how it turned out for me. Stand up for yourself, right?
Yep.
And so I'm always sending them articles or doing, I don't know if they even read them, but I'm doing everything I possibly can in the whole wide world to help educate them more than I was about, you know, emotional abuse and what that looks like and preventing that from the very beginning.
I love it. And I don't know about you, but I didn't have support from anyone outside. I think our generation it was just different the way we were raised. We have grown up, I was born in 70, and we've grown up trying to figure it all out. And what is dysfunction and what does that look like? And what is emotional abuse, which is so hard. And I spent 15 years in the foster care system. And you can take pictures of a bruise on a kid's body, but you can't quantify emotional abuse. And it is far more damaging for a child. And so we've navigated this, you and I, in our generation, you know, trying to figure out, well, what does that mean? And how can we get help and advocating for our kids and wanting them? I mean, I just told my kids, I want you to take everything that I've done, and I've tried really hard to do a good job, and I want you to do it so much better than I have. But the reason I think that that's possible is that we admit, hey, we maybe weren't great at this, take it up a level, and we're supportive and we help them find the answers. So you've done the same thing with your kids as I've done with mine. And I want them to have good relationships. Like, even if it's the family member that was abusive, I want you to have a good relationship with that person. I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily want that.
Well, I hope they figure out some way to navigate the relationship.
Right. They need to navigate. Yes. Right. That's what I think. But you mentioned something about, you know, we all make, we make mistakes in parenting. We make, like, we're not perfect ourselves. And I just had a life story summit, and one of my speakers was the life storian, and she taught about legacy letters. And I am getting ready to do that for my girls. Have you heard of those?
No.
Oh my goodness. It's a step-by-step process where you write, here's what I know about life. Here's the wisdom I want to pass on. You know, I'm, you know, not dying, I'm not planning on dying, but here's what I want to pass on to you. Here's what I think is really important. And I've made mistakes. Here are the things that I apologize that I wasn't there every single ball game. I apologize, you know, regrets. I regret not being, you know, having to work and not being able to go to all your school plays or whatever. And so you do that, and then you say, here's what I love about you. And I'm like, just thinking about writing that has made me tear up many times. And so I'm going away and going to create those, and that legacy of wisdom and that legacy of, you know, understanding and, you know, acknowledging I'm not perfect. And here's what I want you to know about the world and the wisdom that I'd love to pass on. You're boiling it down. You know, like you parents give advice all the time. Like, here, I want you to read this article. Let's talk about it or whatever. And, but this is like, just boil down. Here's the really, if there's nothing else, I want you to know this, and that I love you. I have some regrets. Here they are. And here is the wisdom that I want to pass down. So I'm getting ready to do
it. Yeah. That's a powerful thing to give, but also a pretty intense thing to go through.
To receive.
I mean, I'm thinking about it like, holy cow, that's a lot.
Right.
How did you come to first tell your story? I know you're on my podcast and you shared it. And so I'm guessing there are other ways you've done that, but how did you really in the end share your story?
Mostly that's how I share. And as I have gained wisdom about the benefits of sharing your story and that how that connects you with so many other people. One of the first things I realized as I was starting to, you know, venture out and share pieces of my story, and, you know, it's embarrassing sometimes, or it's humiliating, or it's like shameful sometimes because I didn't make some of the right decisions, right? In the very beginning. But writing helped me to reveal, like, how in the world did I get into an abusive relationship in the first place? Right? When you write, you sort of discover these things. You know, some of the discovery is your superpowers. Some of the discovery is, I made some poor choices, right?
Yeah.
And, but it's doing that with self-compassion and recognizing that, okay, I did the best I could with what I had and what I understood and my upbringing and all of that sort of thing. Everything played in to that at that time. And I made the best decision I could. Now, looking back with older and wiser eyes, I've learned a lot. What have I learned? What does this make possible? And how, you know, what can I go from here? And I love that because each story makes, makes more of your future self possible. Mm-hmm. I had one person tell me, it's like this. You have layers, layers upon layers of community pressures, family pressures, society, your spouse or ex or whatever, your kids, like your employers, your color, your race, your identification of who you are, all of that is piled on top. And what you want to do is pull back all of those layers to find the real you in there, the real you. And that real you is beautiful. Always it's beautiful if you pull back all that. And then the more you can develop the real you, the more resilient you can be. And then you can say, okay, I like that layer. I'm going to take that. No, I don't, that's not me. I'm not going to accept that layer. Mm-hmm. And then you have choices. You open yourself up to choosing what you want and what you don't want. And I think when you're stuck in some of these types of relationships, and I say emotional abuse or tough relationships, mm-hmm. a lot of people do not want to say this is abuse. I didn't want to say this right. is abuse. If you were to tell your therapist and they would say this is abuse, but you don't want to admit it. So I get that. So if you're in a tough relationship, you don't feel like you have choices. You feel like, okay, this is the way it's going to be, or yep. this is how my life was meant to play out. Or if I just hang out here until the kids are 18 or, you know, whatever, you do not have you don't feel like you have choices, even though you really do. So our brains, I said our brains are wired for story. Our brains are wired for story for sure. And, but that means that digging into your stories also allows you to be able to express yourself in a meaningful way. And pretty much everything we experience is story, right? When you Yes. go to the grocery store, when you, you know, when you interact with somebody else, those are all stories. And story is actually a problem solving function, right? Mm-hmm. What story does is when you have this story and you're telling yourself a story about the person, like I'm talking to you and you're talking to me and the people listening, they're telling themselves a story about us mm-hmm. and we're telling ourselves a story about who this is going out to, right? Our brains are wired for that. But what story does is it allows our brains to creatively imagine some outcomes that haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it makes it something sticky in our brains. And of course, that's both good and bad because mm-hmm. when we're young or when we're, I had somebody tell me this story that when she was young, they were singing Christmas carols in church and her father, she must not have been singing really well. And her father reached over and put his hand over her mouth. That simple gesture shut her up as far as sharing her who she was in the world and speaking out for decades. And so that was a story that her brain was telling her, I should not speak out. And now something must have happened to me when I was a child because I was like, my whole brain was telling me, stand in the corner, don't speak up, don't share your opinion, don't do anything, don't raise your hand. And so So that's the bad part. But when you reveal your stories, when you reveal that core you of who you are, and you can share, here's my story, then that's sticky in your brain. And that can, you can then imagine a more resilient future, no matter what situation you're in right now. So stories are good and bad, but you've got to dig into them to find those good ones.
My youngest daughter is really big, and I call it the story you create in your mind.
Yes.
Because it can be like going to a birthday party this weekend and well, okay. And what if this person's going to be here? And what if this happens? And I'm like, you've created this entire story in your mind of what it might be like. And, you know, projection is perception. So if you keep projecting that that's your story, you're going to, you know, people talk about manifesting. I'm like, you're going to create it because you're projecting it so much. You are making sure that you are taking the steps or making other people make the steps so that mm-hmm. that story plays out. Yes. So I'm really big on like, be real careful of the story that you create in your mind yes. on future things that happen. But we do that a lot. And in my book, I called it labels. People label us and we allow it. or we label ourselves. You're a survivor, mm-hmm. you're a victim, you're abused. And those may be correct labels, but they don't necessarily define us. And we create a story around those labels,
yeah,
and attach those to us. And then that becomes our identity. And so yes. if you change the narrative, you change the story that you tell, that you play back.
So true. In fact, they have in therapy, they call it narrative therapy, right? There are some therapies that are narrative therapies. Now, and this doesn't just mean like just talking and talking. Here's the trauma. Here's the tough stuff. Here's the just, you know, all of that sort of thing, because that can actually re-traumatize you.
Correct.
Sometimes. And so we don't want that. We want you to discover those superpowers that you have. And as your brain is telling you these stories, sometimes those stories aren't exactly truth, right? So like your daughter was telling herself a future story, but even in past stories, you know, your brain wants you to be safe. Its whole goal is to preserve itself. Mm-hmm. And to preserve itself, it has to prevent you from taking risks. And when you prevent yourself from taking risk, you just stay your small self, even though you could have, it's like the cage bird. I know why the cage bird sings, and the cage is actually open and you could fly out, but your brain is saying, don't do that. That's going to be dangerous. There's no way you're going to survive on your own. What are you going to do? Other people are going to be talking. Don't do it. And it could be just from that one small incident that happened in childhood. We take that and we bring that into our adulthood, and our 8-year-old self or 14-year-old self is actually directing our 30 and 40-year-old selves and how we interact with the world. So one of the things, the benefits of digging into your stories is finding out what happened and what, you know, clarifying. That's the hugest word that people who write their stories always say. It's, oh my gosh, the clarity I received, because all those stories are rolling around in your head saying, don't do this. That's going to be dangerous. All of that sort of thing. You're never going to be good at writing. Why are you even trying this? Writing is hard, yada, yada, yada. And when you calm that down, you're able to just get it out. It's just for you. It's okay if it's ugly. It's going to be awful. You find the words for what happened to you, and you can really clarify and say, oh, I get it. That's what happened. I'm not at fault. I was only 14 years old, or I'm, you know, that's not, you know, or yes, I made a poor decision when I was in 20, but lots of people in their 20s make, you know, big mistakes like that. That's okay. Now I'm older. Now I'm wiser. I got this. Thank you. That was a great lesson to learn. And so it's important to tell yourself, to dig into your stories for yourself, but also for other people. And here's why. I don't know if you've ever tried to explain what's happened to you to some other people, and they're like, well, why didn't you just leave? Or I don't get it, right? You know, that just doesn't make any sense. A lot of things, especially with in emotionally abusive relationships or tough relationships, that you're like, I can't explain that he spilled the Pepsi all over the table. And it's just there was so much more meaning to that than just spilling, right? You know what I'm talking about. It's the whole stuff behind it and the way he acted and things like that. So when you're doing that, when you're telling your story and getting it out in this ugly form, and then crafting a beautiful story from that, you're actually, and if you share, that actually connects you with the world. Because number one, there are lots of other people who've experienced very similar things, maybe not your immediate family, but other people. And second of all, you're actually reaching across and helping them gain empathy to what you've gone through. Because people, when their brains are wired for story as well. And so you're encouraging people because they gain empathy and they start to put themselves in your shoes and say, oh my gosh, this must have been really tough. Wow. I have another friend who's experiencing some similar things. Maybe I can help her out. Right. So that empathy and that connection is what makes the world go round. What makes a more beautiful world out there instead of this contentious world. You've got to share that story. I recommend.
I 100% do. I tell people that this podcast is the way you can write your story in an hour. I mean, yes. Basically, when you're sharing the story of your life, because not everybody is ready to write it down, which is what I want to talk to you about next. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's ready to write a book and release it like I did. And so if you want to share your story so that you feel validation and you feel all of the great benefits you can from storytelling, and you're allowing other people to resonate with it and help them, that's a huge step in the journey. Just tell me your story in an hour. Write your book in an hour. You talk on your website, which I have up, about writing.
Mm-hmm.
Dive into this, because I am big about actually writing things down, huge about it. I just think that there are incremental steps that people can take. And yes. Max Tucker has a book writing course, but what he says is you're not doing the first draft. The rough draft is not for anyone else. It's called a shitty rough draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he, and if you know that that's where the bar is set for a shitty rough draft, like that's it. That's all you're trying to do. And that it's not for anyone else. It's not ready for, and this is people who want to write a book. You kind of give yourself some grace in the process, which you really should do. So jump in and tell me about writing.
Yes. So again, it's actually called the 2-minute miracle for a reason. There's been a ton of a wealth of studies, scientific, clinical studies around writing just 2 minutes a day helps you heal, right? It boosts your immune system. It helps you emotionally, psychologically, and physically. And so just for you now, that shitty first rough draft is absolutely true. I always teach free writing. And so when you free write, you are just getting this stuff out of your head. You're not worried about punctuation,
right?
Grammar, full sentences, even just get this out of your head and just keep writing. And if you can write for 10 full minutes, great. Go for 20, go for 30, go for 40 if you can without stopping. Now, that is just, your brain's going to say, well, I got this on, I need to get this at the grocery store. Keep writing that. And, I have this to do, or I need to do this, or I can't think of anything to write. Write that. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything to write. Just keep on writing, because your brain, again, is throwing stuff out. It's like trying to protect itself. It's like, don't go there. I don't want you to open up a can of worms. Nobody's going to like this, yada, yada, yada. But again, this is, someone else was saying, it's like vomiting on the page, just vomit out, right? All that junk, all that awful, all that junk. But what happens is you're building a foundation of words and phrases and experiences and stories that will be the very foundation from which you can pluck the amazing stories from. I will tell you, Hemingway didn't write great the very first time draft. Stephen King does not write great the very first draft. Nobody does. I have an aunt who starts, she wants to tell this story of this boy on a train where she experienced, he had a flower, all of this sort of thing. And she writes, here's the opening and here's the middle and here's the end. And it always falls flat because she doesn't do this free writing, because the free writing will help you bring in those emotions, that detail, that junk that's out there that then you can pull the best of and build it into an insightful, cohesive story. If you're just trying to write like your eighth grade grammar, like, okay, you have to have an introduction, you have to have a conclusion, you have to have 3 bullet points, that is not going to be readable ever. Now, if you just do the free writing and just get that junk out, you're going to help heal yourself. Mm-hmm. You can stop there if you want to. Absolutely. If you want to pull it into different stories. And my old writing teacher said, it's kind of like a string of pearls. You have this incident, this scenario, and they're strung together with a common thread, which is you. Or for me, for instance, I discovered my common thread was I didn't raise my hand. So every scene that I wrote about my story had that in there, but I didn't know that until I started writing that junk and getting that junk out of my head. And so it's easy to do when you don't have those expectations. It has to be good writing.
Absolutely. Right. Which is how I started. It wasn't even, oh, have an outline. I didn't want to do an outline. I wanted to free write articulately, which they're not synonymous.
Right.
You're not going to free write articulately. It's going to be,
if you do, you're doing it the wrong way.
Right. And what it also did, I had an editor from the beginning of, and my goal was to write the book. And I am very blessed because I had an editor who's a coach, which is a big, huge, huge difference. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And she said to me, yeah, you need to verbally vomit more because the feeling's not coming out.
Yes.
The facts were coming out, and I used a couple big words and they were grammatically correct, but you didn't feel anything. And so you're 100% right. You don't have to start this process, or if you start this process, whether you want to write a book or not, it's moot. It doesn't matter. It
does not matter. Yeah.
You just want to get it out to heal yourself. And it's generationally healing. I can tell you from
absolutely true.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So when you start out and you're just, I have find that most people who start out with this free writing and they just get this junk out, they keep free writing, keep free writing, keep free writing. I mean, you can free write for days on the same incident, or you can do a different incident each day and then go back, you know, a week or a month later, whatever that is. Eventually you're going to have 70,000 words, right? You're going to get there. And then from there you can say, okay, what are the most salient parts? If I were to share again some wisdom with somebody, what would they want to know? And then you, like I said, you could pluck the right things that are available, or the best types of things for selling a book, because you have to have your reader in mind when you're actually crafting that into a story. And then you can also have help for that part, right? There are editors, there are copy editors, there are developmental editors. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, you're missing this part of the story. Let's build that up a little bit more. So you don't have to write a perfect story from the very beginning. Just get the junk out. And the thing about that is, when you start doing this free writing and you're doing it enough and you're getting, you know, pages and pages, you are actually diving into your subconscious as well. Those are the things that when trauma happens to you, it hides things from you. And so you don't remember a lot of things. This is also a way to start remembering some of those. It hides in a different place than normal memories. And it comes back when it's triggered by a smell or a sound or something like that, right? It comes back in vivid memory. When you're writing it out, when you're finding the words for what's happened to you, it takes that memory out of that one part of your brain and puts it in the regular part where other memories are, where it can also fade. That's the healing part of it. It starts to heal you, because then you can have compassion for yourself. Then you can understand clearly what really happened, rather than the story that your brain is telling yourself about how bad you are. Right. And, but that depth of understanding won't be there until you can get to that point.
A couple things happened. You know, when people are afraid that they're going to put the story out and it's going to offend or upset someone, it will. I mean, in my situation, and I know lots of people's situation, that's a really high likelihood. So you got to be okay with it. But it does the polar opposite also, because I've had other family members read my book and get in touch with me like in tears with these super long emails and, oh my gosh, the healing that needs to happen in the family. It's so much bigger than you think it's going to be on the positive way. So I want people to know that I was told that as soon as you start having critics, like you've arrived. So I remember my first negative comment, I was like, all right, well, I'm here. Right. Okay, good. So, which is silly, but it just helped me process the fact that not everybody's going to be ecstatic about you writing stories of your past that are difficult, but there will be a lot of people who are. And when that happens, it opens up so much more than the people who have shut it down. It's so worth it. I want to talk about you on your website. You know, a lot of us think, how in the world do we get here? And then we write our life stories, and it gives you the courage, what needs to do, what needs to be done. I would think that these are people either really struggling with the baggage of their past or living in a situation that they feel is not right, but they're second guessing it or wanting to leave or feeling like they can't. Let's jump into that.
Yeah, I feel like you're stuck. And that again is your brain. So I was a professional woman. I was in an emotionally abusive situation. And what I did, I was afraid for like, I'm like 10 years, right? I was in this for 10 years. I'm like, this is tough. This is not a normal, you know, I eventually got to the point where I'm like, okay, this is not a normal relationship, but I felt stuck. Like, how was I going to support myself? How was I going to do this? And my brain was telling me, don't rock the boat, just survive. And is, you know, and I was just slogging through each day. That's not a life to live at all, but I didn't feel like I had choices. And so when you write, you actually discover that you do, and you discover what maybe the truth of the situation is. Now, when people write, like you mentioned, you know, they're afraid of hurting other people. They're afraid of what that, you know, don't even write for anybody else.
Yep.
Only write. Don't even worry about that. There are things you can do. You can write under a pen name. You can write, you can change the characters. You can write, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose the name of it. It's fiction, but it's your story in fiction, right? You can fictionalize it. And so, but the same thing is when you're trying to explore what is the situation that I'm in and I feel stuck, your brain's going to say, oh, that's bad idea. Don't even go there. Don't even look up the word sociopath or, you know, emotional abuse. But knowledge is power, right? And it helps you to know yourself in the most amazing way. So why not? Don't just say, okay, this is going to make me leave and I'm afraid to leave. Just say, I'm just curious. What is an emotionally abusive relationship? Does that sound like mine? What do people do in those situations? How does that, and do your research. Knowledge is power. The more knowledge you can get, the better equipped you will be to make the right decisions and or see the choices. And you still have those choices. You do not have to leave, right? Because if you say, oh my gosh, if I explore this and it is, I'm going to have to leave. And then your brain's going to shut it down saying like, no way. Nope. Not going to do that. So just be curious, you know, what do other people do in this situation? Is this really an emotionally abusive situation? What are, you know, other friends or family members telling me that they're seeing? And when you're curious and then you can discover, and then you can see what choices you do have.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I do. You talk about give the courage to do what needs to be done. And that would be a statement I would think for, I mean, it could be you're out of the situation, but now free writing this and doing this has made you realize you want to write the book, or it could be to get you out of that situation. Or it could be that journaling is healthy and it makes it so that you stay in the situation or whatever, but it gives you the confidence to move forward instead of feeling stuck, which is a horrible feeling to have.
Yeah. Because in emotionally abusive situations or any abusive situations, you are denigrated. You are, you know, told you are nothing. Nobody's going to believe you. They tear you down, then they build you up falsely and then tear you down again. And you are on an emotional roller coaster. And so you're not even sure if the decisions you're making are correct. Right.
Yeah.
So the more you can get your story out for yourself, the more you can write, the more clarity, then you can say, okay, I have choices. That's not right. What you just said is not right. You can be braver. You can be bolder. You find your superpowers, right? You discover throughout all this tough situation, I'm like, wow, I'm pretty resilient. I can handle anything, right? But we don't want to handle anything. We don't want to handle those tough, that stuff that we shouldn't handle. One of the really revealing things that I discovered as I was writing and then also bouncing ideas off of other people is when I try to mitigate tried to mitigate my ex's emotions, right?
Okay.
He was getting angry. And I'm like, okay, what can I do to calm him down? That's really not my place.
Uh-huh. That's
not nobody else's place. I am not in charge of anybody's emotions except for mine.
Right.
Now, that is really hard to take, especially when you've been trying to, you know, appease him or her or try to fix things. You're a fixer. I'm a great fixer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're not in charge of anybody else's emotions. They are. If they get upset because that dinner was cooked improperly, or if they get upset because you forgot to meet them at such and such place, that's their problem.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And so, so when you discover these, when you start to do research, when you start to write out what's happened and you can see in black and white exactly how that played out. Oh, wow. Now you can see, well, that wasn't right for them to say that about me or do that. You just start to understand that what's going on, and that clarity will help you, give you purpose and help you understand, okay, now that I know that, where do I want to go from here? And then again, you give yourself some choices, and that's a beautiful thing. All along the way, you're becoming more resilient because you're getting more better understanding of yourself, how you operate in the world, and how you want to operate. Do I want to? I've said this before. My morals and values took a hit when I was in this relationship for 10 years. I accepted things that I should never have accepted. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to admit that to myself. I'm like, oh. But once I got that out there, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that sucked. I definitely shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have accepted that. But you know what? I'm going to move on from there. And here's how I'm going to be from here on out. I have the choice to stop being who I was and start being a person who I wanted to be.
On you have two websites, one stacybrookman.com and the mm-hmm. other one is lifestorylaboratory.com.
Yes.
Yeah. On, and you help people now. I mean, you've taken your situation, what you've done, and now you're helping people. And I love what you say, because I get this comment, not even a question. People don't ask. It's too bad. They just make a statement like, well, my story's not good enough. And you say, helping ordinary people tell their extraordinary stories. And that's a great way to put it also. And I tell people, oh, your story is always enough. If you're willing yes. to dig deep into your story with me, and share it on a podcast and really talk about the stuff that's going to make you cry, that's going to be hard, your story is always good enough. There's not a single person I've ever spoken to whose story was not good enough. But yes. people are under the impression that because they haven't gone through XYZ or something, I don't know where their barometer is, that it's just not good enough. And you say the same thing, helping ordinary people tell extraordinary stories.
Yeah. And that's because, first of all, almost nobody escapes childhood. I don't know a single person like you. I don't yeah. know anybody who has escaped childhood without some sort of trauma.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it's just the nature of childhood and families and what's happened and that sort of thing. And then second of all, there's no trauma Olympics, right? I mean, my trauma versus your trauma, like you don't
right.
care. Or traumas for somebody, right. it could be moving from your childhood home to across the country or the next state over or the next county over, right? That's life changing. Your friends, that could have changed your trajectory. That's a trauma. Or your dog dying, that could be a trauma. That's okay. Right. It's not an Olympic, you know, who has the worst trauma. Trauma right. affects our brains no matter what. Can be bystander trauma.
Yeah.
My kids have bystander trauma mm-hmm. from what happened to me, and they saw it. And of course they were also very affected by it, but it can be like, now I sometimes can't watch the news because I see a lot of trauma, and it's like, oh, that bystander trauma is just as important to understand and dig into than any other trauma. And here's what happens is you make agreements with yourself. Mm-hmm. Your 8-year-old self, your 16-year-old self, your 20-year-old self, your 30-year-old self, whatever it is, when that trauma happens, like, I am never going to speak up again. I'm designed to be in the background. And I still kind of fight that sometimes. I'm like, if there's anybody in the room, I'm not the first person to say anything. I wait till other people say something. And so we make those agreements with ourselves, whether they serve us or not. Mm-hmm. It's just your brain trying to react, trying to say, okay, this happened. That means you can never speak out again. Or this happened. That means you should let other people take charge of your life, right? And it doesn't serve you at all. So the more you write, the more you can uncover that. And then you can make new agreements. I can speak out, right? I never imagined myself 10 years ago at 45, starting to teach other people and talk about this, right? That was so far off of my radar. I am or was, or, you know, I guess an introvert. And I just wasn't me. I could never fathom it. And now I talk about it all the time, and I teach people, and I go on, you know, webinars and all kinds of stuff. So that doesn't mean you have to change your character, your nature, who you really are. Mm-hmm. But when you discover your superpowers, when you discover those agreements and you're like, you know what, that doesn't serve me very well, you become a better version of yourself, the best version of yourself you could possibly be. And who wouldn't want to do that, no matter what kind of trauma you've had?
No kidding. You also talk about, I'm trying to find it right now, you talk about clarity. I love that. Mm-hmm. And let me see, stop being foolish for your past mistakes, but also boosting your self-esteem. When I was writing the book, and it was a true story, and it's in chronological order, I jumped around in writing it, but in each trauma or section, or we tend to group things in like, oh, well, my parents divorced when I was 6. So it's everything up to 6. And my mom remarried when I was 9. So we group things, like we chunk our lives like that. And when you look at that, when I was writing, like you were talking about the superpowers, I realized I was learning things that I was adding to my toolbox. I was learning this skill set that was very unique. And your 6-year-old self isn't like, well, I'm going to put that one in my back pocket for later. So you don't, until you're writing this stuff down, your traumas down, you don't realize that on the flip side, and you talk a lot about that on your website, on the flip side, well, there's this other whole other side to the story where you're learning skill sets to build this toolbox to serve you. Maybe not all of it is serving you well, because you've already talked about that. But it's there's no way it can't boost your self-esteem and self-worth when you realize not only did you get through it, but holy cow, like, you learned all of these incredible things. You're this amazing person, despite the fact.
Thank you.
Right. Yes, and you've learned that, and you teach that.
Yes. Yeah. And here's the thing. Sometimes it's hard when you're starting out writing to believe what amazing life that you can live, or that you can find some superpowers. And so I love bridging thoughts, not, you know, oh, I'm going to be an amazing public speaker, right? No. Oh, I can have the best life. I'll be a millionaire, that sort of thing. No, if you tell yourself that your brain's going to say, no, and you're not going to be able to overcome that. But if what you say is, you know what, I am working on learning to be a person who stands up for herself, right? That's a bridging thought. You cannot imagine standing up for yourself and saying to that abusive partner, no, like, you cannot even fathom that. And your brain is telling you, don't ever do, like, just don't, just take it and let it go and move on. Right.
Right.
And so that bridging thought can help you to get there. And so, you know, wow, I may be able to escape. I could possibly have a better life. It might be possible. Or I'm learning to become a person who could stand up for herself. I could be wrong about my previous thoughts of being stuck. Right. And so that bridging thought can help you to, again, be curious. Love that word, curiosity.
Yeah.
You can just be curious. That's not condemning. That curiosity is not dangerous. It's safe. All you're doing is being curious about it. And those curiosity thoughts, I wonder, I could be wrong about that thought that I have of being stuck. but you don't know about that thought of being stuck until you get to writing. You start writing all this stuff out. So that's where clarity comes from, when you start to understand what your brain is trying to is telling you. Some of it lies, some of it not, and you kind of can sort that out. And when you get that out, then you can decide what to do with it. And that's a beautiful thing.
Tell me about freedom. Oh my gosh, there's my word, right? There's freedom. There's so much freedom in telling your story. There's so much freedom. Tell me about, okay, so I want to end with all the ways you can help people. You first of all, on stacemeebrookman.com, you have the Life Story Summit, which looks free. It's a free webinar. Is that right?
That's over, but it's okay. I've turned it into the Life Story Challenge course. So if you are challenged and want to challenge yourself to start digging into your life stories, there are people there that in this course that I've interviewed that talk about sharing your story in a TED talk, sharing your story in a poem, right? Fictionalizing your story. What can sharing your story do for your, or digging into your story? So you don't always have to share, but digging into your story, all the whole gamut of these things. And one of them is the art of kintsugi. And kintsugi is the Japanese art of, a pot is dropped, it's broken, it's in pieces. And you, when you put it back together, you put it back together with precious metals, gold. Right? Yeah. And so that brokenness stands out. But also when you put it back together with those precious metals, it's stronger than ever. So we talk about that. And so
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool.
And then you have the Life Story Summit, which you've changed, and then the Emotional Abuse Summit, and then the Life Story Laboratory. Just go into those a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Life Story Summit is all about life storytelling. It's all about digging into your story and that sort of thing. So all around story, whether it's, the family history stories and the legacy letter teaching is in there as well, right? So all different kinds, not necessarily trauma. The Emotional Abuse Recovery and Resilience Summit is amazing. That is, what happens in court? How can you go to court with somebody? What do you do with your finances? How do you begin that process? How do you even go to a shelter? That's one of the things, like I had to go to a shelter twice. I'm like, I had no idea how to actually go about doing that. But it's also like spiritual abuse. Like what if like nobody from your church believes you and what makes an abusive relationship, right? Because a lot of times religion is used to abuse you even more. And so, but also what does this make possible? The things about emotional abuse that you have come through, what does that make possible for you? How can you imagine a greater future for yourself? And so that's Emotional Abuse Summit all around. Like just go and look at all the different presenters and the topics, like everything. I wanted it to be incredibly comprehensive. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, the Life Story Laboratory is my favorite. I love Life Story
Laboratory. And that's what your separate website, the lifestorylaboratory.com, is that about that? Okay.
That is about that. Yeah. So that is all about, hey, how do you dig into your story? We take you through the process of, first of all, understanding the science behind storytelling, right? What does that do to your brain? How does that help you? And so you understand and are more motivated to start writing, even if it's awful, ugly, that's okay. That's good, in fact. But understanding how that helps your brain help you. And so not only the science, but then how do you do it? And I take you through this process of digging into your stories, because you've got to embrace your stories first before you can enable your stories. And that's the second step, is enable them to help you and your life right now. And then enhance your stories. Yeah, they're ugly, but there is wisdom inside of there. How do you pull that out and enhance your stories? And then that last piece is elevate your stories. Mm-hmm. And that is connecting with other people and helping them be more empathetic towards other people and just connecting your story with others. You don't ever have to, but I encourage it, because what if there is somebody just about to go through what you've been through, or in the midst of going through what you have gone through? Wouldn't you want to give them a shortcut? And that's so the Life Story Laboratory is an actually practical writing, teaching, understanding, and digging into your story and taking you through that process.
Yeah, you have it broken down into modules. It's really pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. And that's the biggest thing about how pleased I always am when people are brave enough to share their stories with me. What an honor, right? That's such a gift that they're trusting me to hold space for their story in the hopes that it helps that one person.
Yes, exactly.
Almost every single interview I've done, 300 something in 4 years, they're almost all entrepreneurs, and 100% of them, this was really interesting to me in the beginning when I wasn't looking for statistics, but I realized all of a sudden 100% of entrepreneurs birth their business from their struggle. That was the first thing, which wasn't really shocking, but 100% of them did it so that other people struggling, it would be faster, easier, and more supported.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what we're doing with sharing our stories.
Solving a problem, helping to solve a problem for somebody else, giving them that shortcut. And I love it. And you become braver in the meantime, right? To take those next steps. And that's beautiful.
Discovering the superpowers. I think that that's such a great place to kind of wrap up and end, because it's so much more powerful than people will ever imagine when you kind of realize the skills that you are building in the toolbox, and then you start to recognize this beautiful person that came out of all of that. Can you dig into that just a little bit? I think that's just a great place to wrap up.
Yeah. So a lot of our childhoods were not, you know, perfect, and most of our childhoods were not. It doesn't have to be abusive, but there's always something. Our parents fail all the time. I fail, you fail. I mean, and so there's a portion of you that is just wasn't nurtured the way you possibly could have been into an amazing, perfect human being, right? And so when you write, you start to flesh out some of those things that maybe nobody recognized in yourself, and you didn't recognize in yourself either, that you might be good at, or that you, you know, that is your superpower. And if you've been in an abusive relationship, you know, you are just sometimes physically, but definitely emotionally beaten down. And you just think negatively about yourself. Sometimes you're your worst critic. That critic and that mean girl in your head is telling you you're bad at this. Don't do it. Don't ever do anything. And then the other thing that happens is maybe we were good at painting. Maybe we were good at expressing ourselves, or we were smart. We, you know, did some, you know, spelling bee or something, and you lost that. And you lost that because people were trying to say, oh, why are you trying to be better than us? Right. And people sometimes unwittingly just trample on you. When you write, you can rediscover that person who you dreamt of being as a little girl, who you really want to be. Maybe you didn't even dream about that, but now you want to be a public speaker. Maybe now you want to be an engineer. Maybe now, like, there are people who start out in the amazing life that they were meant to be in their 50s and 60s mm-hmm. and 70s. What was it? Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Sanders didn't start until he was in his, was it 60s or 70s?
I don't know. It's a pretty incredible story, though.
Yeah. So writing helps to bring all that out and give you possibilities where you hadn't had them before. And it helps you see for yourself that you do have superpowers. And then it helps you understand how you can bring those superpowers out to share with others as well, to build them up.
Oh, Stacey, it's been so fun catching up. We can't let a year go by again.
I know it.
I love it. Thank you so much for being on.
You are welcome. I do have one more word of wisdom.
Yes.
Two things. First of all, when you're writing, I want you to be completely honest with yourself. Do not hold back. If there is any one place in the entire earth that is safe, it is right there in your own stories and uncovering your own stories. You don't have to show it to anybody. That's the one thing. And then the second thing, I want people to acknowledge and appreciate the experience of writing and the experience of knowing yourself in a unique and amazing way. Very few people, like fewer than 4% people in the entire world write about their experiences. And if you are writing, if you get started writing, you are in that top 4%. That's an amazing statistic in itself, right?
Yes.
But you get to know yourself in such a unique way, and you get to know who you are. And that is a gift you can give yourself. So be honest and acknowledge and appreciate the experience of writing and the experience of knowing you. I think that's amazing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so proud of you, but I'm so excited.
It's very, very excited. It's exciting. And I want to thank you. Thank you for doing what you do and bringing people on and sharing this with the world. I mean, you are doing a service and so many people are benefiting from it. So thank you.
That's our goal. You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah.